If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
Eric Zorn, the publisher of the Picayune Sentinel, that weekly newsletter, the longtime Tribune columnist and mincing rascal, is on a phone line. Morning, Eric. How are you?
I'm good, John. How are you?
Pretty good. We've still got about 70 or so availabilities. I guess those would be seats for the Mincing Rascals podcast, which is right around the corner now. That's going to be recorded live Tuesday, September 26th. So a week from today, 6 to 8 p.m., and that's going to be at Second City. You can get some food and beverage, sit down and yuck it up with us or be outraged by the things we'll all be saying.
Yeah, it's a week from tonight. It should be really fun. I'm really looking forward to it.
How's your hair? Have you pressed your blazer? Are you stage ready, Eric?
I'm going to use one of those orange broadcaster blazers, you know, that radio stations used to use. And I think I'll go with a mohawk for my haircut.
Okay.
You know, people haven't seen me in a while, so, you know, just something to get people talking. So
yeah, well, I think that would. Incidentally, just speaking of our appearance, you mentioned in the latest Picayune Sentinel, the 50 things I learned in my first 50 years is a column you wrote in the Tribune in 2008. But you also, years later, wrote my 14-point plan to being a good old man. And maybe we'll get to that in just a couple of minutes. But I really like what you did there. And among them, you say, don't eat like you're still 25. God, I got to remember to do that. You can't now, anyway. Keep moving. Cultivate hobbies. Brenda and I talk about this all the time. We've got to keep our interests going and growing. Get good hearing aids. And don't hide or hide behind your age. Well, I guess I've talked about your list now, Eric, but that was really a thoughtful 14-point plan to being a good old man or person, I'll add.
Yeah, thanks. I did the 50 things I learned in my first 50 years in 2008 when I turned 50, and then this follow-up I did 10 years later when I was turned 60. And I was thinking, well, you know, how am I going to be a good old man? And I thought rather than rehashing all the things that I'd learned over the years, I just thought I'll just add these tips to myself and others about, you know, being a good old person, you know, someone who, and you know, one of the things I have in there is to get good hearing aids. And I think a lot of people of our, well, of this particular vintage feel like hearing aids are really a terrible thing, terrible sign of age, but in fact, they're not, and they're really useful for people. And you know, you and I both know people who are even younger than we are who have hearing aids, and there's no shame. It's like wearing glasses, right? It's a sensory enhancing device, and they're also really inconspicuous these days. It's not like the old days.
That's a good way to put it. I mean, if you're comfortable wearing glasses, you ought to be able to. It's a sensory improvement device. That's the perfect way to put it. You wouldn't think, I don't like glasses. I'm not going to get glasses. We should regard hearing aids the same way. Maybe if they make them in designer styles, rather than hiding them, maybe make them big designer muffs, something that would go over my ear and I would actually accentuate rather than try and minimize. How about that, Eric?
People go, those are Calvin Klein hearing aids you have there.
How could, back how off,
fashion,
Jack.
Fashion forward. Yeah, that's really great. That's a great idea. No, they're very inconspicuous these days. You don't even know people have them on for the most part. And they work really well, as far as I know. I don't have them yet, but I'm really open to the idea.
Do you need them? Has your wife told you that you need them? Because that's how most of us know we need them.
Well, I think, no, she just realizes that sometimes I ignore her requests, but she knows that I can hear them. So, no, I'm good right now. But I don't have any real problem with the idea of that kind of assistance at some point. I know that one of the things that can happen to people as they get older is they get more isolated, sonically isolated. And my mother-in-law at one point got to the point where she wasn't hearing very well and she was having auditory hallucinations. She was hearing things that weren't there because she wasn't getting enough, you know, oral stimulation. And so that can happen too if your hearing aids aren't working very well. So it's really an important thing. And that was just one of my 14 points, but I wanted to stress it.
Mayor Brandon Johnson praised the Mexican Independence Day weekend. He called it an amazing celebration. he always says the wrong thing about the right things, or the right thing about the wrong things. I wouldn't have said that. I mean, or if maybe I've misquoted him, maybe I've insufficiently quoted him. Maybe he said, however, but that's not in the story I have in front of me. What is your thought about what happens downtown Chicago on the weekend of the Mexican Independence Day celebrations?
Well, it's dangerous. First of all, clearly you can't get first responders can't get through the traffic. It's disrespectful of people who live downtown, who have to work downtown on the weekends. And I understand that there is a pent up need to celebrate, and we have celebrations for, you know, Columbus Day and things like that for other ethnic groups. And I don't see any problem. You know, the St. Patrick's Day parades. It's fine to celebrate your ethnic heritage, and I think that the city needs to do a better job in resurrecting the Mexican Independence Day celebrations that they used to have. There used to be a parade and a festival, and they don't have that anymore, and I'm not sure why. But I think if you were to be able to direct that enthusiasm, that energy off the city streets, that would be go a long way toward making people feel better about the celebration. I think it's a little bit counterproductive. I have heard from a lot of people, and I'm sure you've heard from many, many more people, but that they were really annoyed by not being able to move. The people who were stuck in traffic and couldn't move for hours. And that's like I say, it's dangerous and disrespectful. And does it make people feel better about our fellow Chicagoans who are of Mexican descent? I don't think so. I think it could backfire in that way. So I would really like to see the city, rather than just say it's a wonderful thing or whatever, that they need to figure out. And I believe that there's some aldermen of Mexican descent who are proposing just such a thing, that they realize that this is perhaps a little counterproductive, and they need to redirect that you know, understandable energy, that enthusiasm people have. But no, it's not a beautiful thing. A lot of people were arrested, and a lot of people were inconvenienced, and I don't think that's a great way to celebrate your heritage.
Talk to me about tipped wages in Illinois. What's happening, and what's your thought about that?
Well, this is a really interesting topic to me because, you know, essentially Chicago is going to become, I think, the first city to unilaterally try to eliminate the tipped wage. And right now, I think it's about 60%. The tipped wage is lower than the minimum wage because the thought is, well, the servers and so on who are getting tips, that they don't need to get the minimum wage because they're going to be able to get that much or more. In fact, the law requires them to get at least that much in tips. So the new ordinance is going to be phased in over a few years, is going to bring that minimum wage of the tipped wage, going to eliminate the tipped wage and bring it up to the standard minimum wage. The question that then arises is, what does that do to the custom of tipping? One of the reasons that we tip, those of us who are decent people realize that these servers depend on the tips to make their minimum wage. And so suddenly, if you've got a situation where you know your server is making the minimum wage, then you say, well, okay, do I reduce my tips? And then the other question is, right now, I don't know whether like Starbucks baristas or all the people who, you know, when they turn the credit card thing around and there's the little tip options that they show you, I don't know if those people are getting the minimum wage or if they're getting the tipped wage right now. And I was looking online at some of the comments that people were making about this, and there were a lot of people who were saying, good, this is the end of tipping, don't have to tip anymore. And I don't know really how to think about that exactly.
Well, my guess is that that's going to mean less money for those people. I'll bet that if you said, I guess it depends on where you work, but there's plenty of places I go, bars and restaurants, where I would imagine one table with four dinners and drinks would make up the difference between the tipped wage and the new minimum wage. If you don't tip those people, if they don't get tipped, they're going to make a lot less money with this higher minimum wage, don't you think?
Right. It's very difficult, I find, to talk about tipping at all or write about it, because you end up sounding like Elmer Fudd, you know, the character in the Bugs Bunny cartoons who doesn't believe in tipping, and he's considered to be a figure of fun and a flinty character, and you don't want to be that person. But on the other hand, you say, like, well, okay, I have been tipping because I do feel this responsibility to make up that difference, which is an odd custom that we have here, which is that, you know, the restaurants don't pay their people enough, and they count on you to to kick in extra on top of what you've already paid for your meal or your drinks to make up for that difference. And, it'd be simpler if there was just like a service charge attached to your bill. You paid that or whatever, however they want to handle it, rather than making people figure out what's fair. And I think you're absolutely right that you're going to have servers who are, there are probably going to be some who are going to do better because they work in places where the food doesn't cost that much and the tips are kind of skimpy. And there are also probably servers at higher end restaurants who, you know, where a check can easily be $400 or $500, and people are might well say, well, you know, this person is getting their wage, and I'll leave a little tip, but I'm not going to leave 25%. I don't know, I know that this has happened elsewhere, like in Los Angeles, for instance. It happened, I guess, because California has a state law mandating no lower wage for tipped employees. Mm-hmm. I don't know what this does to the practice of tipping, but I did see a lot of response online this morning to people who are just sort of celebrating the end of tipping. And I don't know that those people are cheap, or they just are kind of annoyed by
I don't think they were big tippers to begin with. Those people, here's the thing. I mean, because a lot of you are anxious to be released from the bonds of the mandatory or the expected tip. But I think most of us, if you travel to a country where tipping is not the norm, as an American, it's still hard to walk away and not having left something on the table, because that's our cultural norm. We've been doing it for 20 or 50 or 60 years, however long you've been picking up the check. And so to walk away from the table and say, see ya, just feels so wrong. Now, maybe in time we'd get used to it and we wouldn't think twice about it. And maybe the staff would feel that was fair. But that's not where we are today. All right, Eric, I got just a couple minutes. Can we talk briefly about the little library proposal?
Yeah, Alderman Lopez of the 15th Ward has made a proposal that would essentially outlaw what are technically called public bookcases. These are the free libraries that people have on their lawn extensions. Generally, that's where they are. And he says that only educational institutions, daycare centers, public and private libraries, not-for-profit organizations, and things like that are eligible to use the public way, which was technically that area across the sidewalk is the public way. And you can't use them, and you can't put them there if you're a citizen. You can put them on your property, but you can't put them on what is technically the city property. I don't know, and I just saw a notice about this online. I think these are one of the most wonderful little things about life. These are relatively new. I'm not sure exactly how long this has been going on, but they're great. It's just a way to go, and I think you said earlier in the show that you haven't seen people using them. I see people using them all the time in our neighborhood. We have about four or five of them, and people just stop by and they look in and they take out a book or they'll bring in, put some of their own books in there.
Who is complaining about this? What problem is this fixing? Did see people say, I can't believe that there's a little birdhouse with books in it in the public way. This has got to stop. Who are those people?
John, this is one of the biggest problems that Chicago is now facing, and you know it. Now, it's one of those things. Apparently, the ordinance doesn't have any co-sponsors yet, so it's very unlikely to get any traction. But it kind of gives you a view into the aldermanic mindset, right? Which is like he's creating a problem where none exists that I can tell, and wanting to get rid of these things. And again, I think they're just wonderful. Invention is probably the wrong word, but just a wonderful development in our society. It's like, you know, sharing books. A lot of us have a ton of books on our shelves that I'm probably never going to open again, and that other people might want to see. And rather than take them to a bookseller or try to do a garage sale or something like that, just put them out there and do a book exchange. You know, take a book, leave a book, and that increases literacy and pleasure. And I don't see any downside to it at all. I maybe you can get Alderman Lopez on the phone and he can explain why this is such a menace that we need to deal with it.
But I don't even want to talk about it. And by the way, you call him. You call him and write about it. I'm not going to give it the time. It's not going to happen. But the word I still like is gesture. Maybe you see it used more. It's more practical than I'm making it sound. But to me, it's a sign like I'm here for you. I'm here to give you something that I think will help you. It helped me. And it does go to your 14-point plan on, good ways to be a good old man. And one of them was practice of deaccession, which is something I've never heard of. What is deaccession?
Well, deaccession, it means, you know, it means getting rid of the things, discarding and donating the accumulated household stuff that you don't need anymore and that your heirs are probably not going to want to deal with after you're gone. Yeah. And it's one of my dad's favorite terms that we've been deaccessioning his house, my parents' house in Ann Arbor, going back and going through and finding things that, you know, honestly, I'm not going to read these books. There are a lot of them are science books that way above my level of understanding, and there's some artwork that he's gotten rid of, and just going through, and a lot of clothing that they're never going to wear again. Oh. And it's just good to get rid of it. It's really good to get rid of that stuff and not worry about what the resale value is. Just donate it. And so you know, practice this at all times. Don't keep accumulating stuff. It's the opposite of deaccessioning is the opposite of hoarding. I think it's a really important thing to practice.
So. To the makers of precious moments, you can stop now. Okay, we have enough of them, and if we need more, we'll get them at a garage sale. But that's an example in my world of things that my parents have some of, and it's on a shelf in a bureau that nobody's going to want. God bless them.
Yeah,
God
I mean, don't you think that when you walk to go to their house and you look on the shelves and you just go like, someday we're going to have to rent a dumpster and get rid of this stuff.
No, and I feel bad about that because I
no you.
Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, but you'd like it to get into the hands of someone who would like to use it, which is why donating it to someplace or you're free to a good home is a great way because there are people out there who are going to enjoy those precious moments figurines will toss into the dumpster. No, John, I think you're wrong about that. There are people who love that stuff. So.
I'll bring them to the podcast then, and we'll see if anybody wants to take them. Eric Zorn is the publisher of the Picayune Sentinel. He'll sign you up for free. Just email ericzorn@gmail.com. And then look for me and Eric, our John Hansen, Brandon Pope, and Austin Berg, the usual gang that chats it up. And we will be next Tuesday night at Second City from 6 to 8 p.m. Get your tickets. Go to WGNRadio.com/rascals. Thank you, Mr. Z.
Thanks, John.